It's time!
Happy number one medal! The Eagle rises again! 29-0.
That's it! He's got the chance!
Nate Diaz!
He's out!
You're listening to Pound for Pound, ringside for all things MMA and boxing on WFUV Sports.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Pound for Pound. I'm your host, Andrew Canary, and I'm here with Riley Lucas and Andy Rodriguez. Guys, it's a good week to be an MMA fan. We got UFC 294 just days away, and despite the early start time, I know I'm going to be tired, but I'm still pumped to watch these fights and discuss them with you. But first, how are you guys doing?
Well, I'm stoked. This is my dream fight card. I've been waiting for this card for a very long time. I've expressed multiple times how I've been super disappointed with these past cards, but now I have my Russian gang on here. I think we already know who I'm going to be pulling for, but we'll get into that in a minute.
Yeah, I'm very excited as well. This is a very great card. Even though we had a couple last-minute changes, I still think it's a very, very good card for the fans. The time is a bit unfortunate, but hey, I don't have to stay up late now, so it's kind of a win-win in some ways.
Just get up early.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't think we should bury the lead anything or whatsoever at all. I mean, that's the first thing we learn in journalism. So I think you hit a great point there. Two late notice replacements in this card, and I was very disappointed to see that. Initially, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe Charles Oliveira is out of this fight. And also the Khamzat Chimaev fight, Paulo Costa dropped out. It seemed like this card was falling apart. But last second, Volkanovski accepts the fight against Makhachev, causing this now immediate rematch. And also Kamaru Usman moving up a weight class, going up to 185, 15 pounds heavier than he normally fights at, to fight Khamzat Chimaev, which is a dream fight. I mean, I know people, ever since Khamzat Chimaev has gone into the UFC, people have wanted to see him fight Usman. But yeah, it turned actually out into a pretty great card, and I can't wait to just hop right into it and discuss some of these fights on the actual main card. So let's just jump right into it. I want to talk first about Ikram Alaskarov versus Warley Alves. And the main thing I want to talk about with this fight is that Alaskarov really only has, to date only has one fight in the UFC. And actually, I was thankful enough to actually see that in person. I believe that was at Madison Square Garden. And he knocked out Phil Haas, I think it was in like the second round, third round, something like that. But he looked fantastic. And then I believe at one time he was slated to fight Paulo Costa before that fight fell through. So obviously the UFC thinks very highly of Alaskarov. And I was just wondering, do you guys think the same of him? Do you think he has that much potential in the UFC or not?
I mean, it's hard for me to answer because I want to say yes. I do think maybe they're overhyping him a little too soon, but in the same breath, he's young, he's fast, he provides immense pressure. I think he's a great fighter, and I think he also comes from that whole Dagestani upbringing, and that's a big theme in the UFC, and I think that caters to him, and caters to his audience in the UFC, and I think they like to capitalize on that.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think the fact that his last name ends with a V is kind of helping him speedrun the career here in the UFC, but also, like, just looking closely at his career, even though he has one fight in the UFC, he's still 14-1. Mm-hmm. And I think that says a lot in this type of sport. Four-time world champion in combat sambo, like two-time European champion. So I think he has the credentials to be there. So it's not so much overhyped, it's just he's unknown in UFC specifically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, this being his second fight in the UFC and to be the -650 favorite is crazy. It's crazy, and that to me shows that maybe the hype is real.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I'm kind of going on the side of believing that the hype is real. I'm not 100% sure. I'm really interested to see what he does against somebody like Warley Alves, because Warley Alves does have a history of, you know, putting in some big upsets in the UFC. Most notably, he actually bumped Colby Covington off of his undefeated streak. He was the first person to ever hand him a UFC loss. And I believe it was a guillotine in the first round. But yeah, Worley Alves is just really dangerous when it comes to submission grappling. He's also not too bad on the feet. But yeah, I don't know really where this fight will play out. Honestly, I'm thinking it's probably going to be a true MMA fight. We're going to see a lot on the ground, a lot in the clinch, and definitely some stand-up where I think Askarov definitely has the edge. But I'm just interested. What do you guys, what do you think, how is this fight going to pan out?
He's going to smish him. He's going to smish your boy. I think he got it. I think he's going to have it. You know, looking at that one loss, it was against another guy in the card, Khamzat. So that's, I know he got KO'd, but Khamzat himself said that, like, Askarov is really good, and he was still able to stuff some of the takedowns, so he shows some ground take, like, defense there. So I think he's got it. You know, the 14-1 is tough to overlook, especially in a sport like MMA. It's really tough to get that far.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think we know what I'm about to say here. I'm never pulling against those V last names. Never pulling against a Russian, as we all know here. I just think Askarov's, like I said, he's younger, faster. He's going to apply pressure. I think a quick submission is going to make the most sense here, and I could see that happening. And Alves notably has not won a fight since 2021. Everything Askarov has is better than him. I mean, he has 6.25 significant strikes per minute in the octagon in comparison to 3.21 significant strikes. It's just everything on paper looks better for Askarov. And on top of that, he's just a Dagestani killer. So I'm pulling for him. I really am. I think this is going to be an easy, quick fight.
Got you. Yeah, I mean, I think I'm going with Askarov here also. I'm not too sure if it's going to go the distance, if it's going to be a quick finish. Obviously, Askarov is, I'm assuming, hoping that he's going to get a quick finish in there, but we'll see. But the main thing I want to highlight before we move on from this fight was that I was worried that Askarov didn't really have the experience to be competitive in the UFC in a main card slot. But looking at his age, I mean, he's 30 years old, and you also want to talk about the Chimaev fight. He's fought some really, really great guys,
mm-hmm.
Even before coming into the UFC, and also had some development time fighting Dana White Contender Series. So I think that Askarov is definitely going to get it done.
Yep.
And over a big name like Worley Alves, I mean, not the hugest of names, but I think it could get him a really good start in this UFC, especially after that Phil Haas knockout a while ago.
Of course. And I mean, notably, too, they're just, these Dagestani guys, they're just mentally different. There's no way around it. I think we could all agree, anyone who's a UFC fan can see that. They know it's true whether we admit it or not. So I think that is just really comes into play here. I think he's mentally ready for this because he's just mentally built different. And I also think we have to remind ourselves where this fight's taking place. It's more of an audience that he's going to perform better in front of. So
yeah, and that could definitely help in that, like, main card debut where, like, maybe you get a bit nervous, whatever. But if you have the fans with you, it's going to help it so much to have people support you. Like, if everyone was against him, then I'd be more cautious. Like, he might choke, but I think he's got this one easy finish.
Got you, yeah. I mean, I think you guys did highlight a great thing of, you know, the home field advantage here. And I've seen it play out two different ways with fighters. I've seen it either work really, really well, or, you know, they kind of build it up too much for themselves. Like, oh, this is my homecoming. This is where I really have to perform. And sometimes that pressure gets to them. But we'll just see how Askarov performs. As you can hear from us at Pound for Pound, I think we're all kind of rooting for him here, or at least think that he's going to win. But we'll see what happens on Saturday night. But moving on to this next fight in the main card, we got Magomed Ankalaev fighting Johnny Walker in the light heavyweight division. Should be a really, really fun fight. And this is actually the first fight for Ankalaev since his disappointing draw against Jan Blachowicz for the light heavyweight championship. That obviously, you know, ended in a draw. People didn't love that fight. And then Jamal Hill versus Glover Teixeira got scheduled. And then Jamal Hill won the belt, but then he got injured. So now the light heavyweight division still just kind of in a weird spot. Hopefully that will be solved when Jiří Procházka and, oh my God, I'm forgetting the name. Zach. Alex Pereira, thank you so much. Wow, I can't believe I blanked on that. But when Jiří Procházka fights Alex Pereira, hopefully some of that will be cleared up. But we still have a very, very interesting fight here. Ankalaev is a scary, scary kickboxer. I feel like he has some really dangerous kicks, which is notable for light heavyweight division because these guys are heavier. They're not as fast. But I mean, his body kicks are crazy. But also on the other side of the octagon, Johnny Walker is one of the most unpredictable fighters I think we've ever seen in the light heavyweight division or the UFC overall. I mean, this guy will just show up, throw some weird elbows, a spinning back fist, and then do a worm on the cage when he's done knocking you out. So my question is, who do you think is going to win this fight? And do you think they're going to become a real contender after this win if they do, you know, get something emphatic?
Well, guess who you think I'm pulling for?
Let me take a crazy guess. Is it Ankalaev?
How'd you know? No, I will say that with this whole fight card, this is probably the one fight I'm the most iffy on. It's even though Ankalaev is the -350 favorite, I still am a little iffy because if you look at their significant strikes per minute, they're pretty neck and neck. It's a matter of 3.55 and 3.85, which is super close, as well as the strike inaccuracy between both of these guys. It's only a difference between a 4% margin, and I think that's something that we really have to note here. Obviously, I'm still pulling for Ankalaev. I think he's going to do his thing here, but counter shots I really think are going to benefit him. But in retrospect, however you see that, if Walker can really just hurt him at any point and get a good strike there, I think it's going to make this a unique matchup. I think it's going to change some things up. I think it really is just a matter of how they go into this fight that first round.
Definitely. And I think you're kind of alluding to what Andrew was talking about with Walker having that, like, X factor kind of where you really just don't know what to expect. But the other thing that I'm thinking is, like, on Clive, he's like, he had, before that draw, he had 9 wins in a row. 5 of those were finishes. And even though it was a disappointing draw, in his mind, that's probably like a loss. And so coming from a loss after such a long win streak, I feel like he'll have that hunger where he'll come out swinging. Like, he's desperate to, like, get this win, especially because the title's vacant at the moment. So I think he's got the desire to do it more than Walker in a way, which is, I know it's tough to, like, just assume that, but that's just the way I see it. So I think that gives him the edge there.
Got you. Yeah, no, definitely. And I imagine, I mean, if one of these guys have a big win, they could find themselves in a replacement slot for the title fight at MSG, which is quickly approaching next month. But yeah, we'll have to see. I mean, the main thing that is a question mark for me in this fight is just Johnny Walker overall, because I've had like a storied history with watching this guy in the UFC. I used to be so big on him when he came into the UFC, and like, I think it was like 2018, 2019, he had a couple huge knockouts, and I was like, wow, this guy is like the future of the light heavyweight division. Since then, he got exposed by Corey Anderson, who's now in Bellator, and since then, he's just kind of had some boring fights, and then mixed in with some like crazy highlights, so it's a real kind of luck of the draw if you're going to get a Johnny Walker that seems like he's really on it, or somebody that looks like they're kind of schnoozing in the octagon. But I mean, looking at his most recent record, he's strung together 3 wins. And I believe his last loss was against former champion Jamal Hill, who is no joke whatsoever. So I think Johnny Walker is in a position to get a big upset here. You know what? Yeah, I think I'm going to go with Johnny Walker. I think if anything, he'll probably get a finish. I don't see him winning by decision at all, because I think Ankalaev is probably the better technical fighter. Correct. In every margin, whether you go to the ground, striking, clinch. But Johnny Walker, I feel like he, like you said, he has the X factor where he might be able to use his physicality and just unpredictability to really catch Ankalaev out in the open. And we've seen him hurt. I mean, most notably in his draw against Jan Blachowicz, he got really hurt to the legs, like really, really bad. And I'm not saying Johnny Walker's a crazy calf kicker or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But I'm just saying the opportunities are open.
Yeah.
For Johnny Walker to take advantage. But yeah, it should be a really, really fun fight. And like you guys said, it's a big question mark for this main card. I feel like we kind of have our predictions pretty much set up as we move throughout this main card. But this one is just kind of my big question mark. I'm interested to see how it plays out. But moving on to this co-main event, yeah, this is one of the big ones. This is my, like, dream matchup when Khamzat Chimaev first came into UFC. He was, like, 3 fights in, like, absorbed, like, 2 significant strikes. Obviously, that stat goes out the window when you talk about the Gilbert Burns fight that he had. But this should be an amazing fight. But I do want to talk a lot about where Kamaru Usman is at in his career, because it's very interesting to see kind of the timeline since he's gotten the belt, losing the belt to Leon Edwards, then having that disappointing rematch, and then finally moving up 15 pounds to take on a really scary dude in Khamzat Chimaev, which I will say massive respect. I mean, just not being worried or terrified at all, just be like, yeah, I'll move up 15 pounds. I'll fight one of the scariest guys in the middleweight division or in the UFC overall. But I'm just worried. Usman has taken a lot of damage recently in his fights, and a lot of people talk about his knees being shot and the wrestling not really being as great as it was when he was in his prime. So how do you think Usman is going to look in the octagon against Chimaev? Do you think he's going to be competitive?
I'll let you take that one first, Andy, because we know what I'm going to say.
I've been thinking about it during my whole commute. This is the fight that's got me like pondering, like really grinding my gears. Like, I don't know what's going to happen.
Really?
Because of Usman. Like, I think he's such a weird fighter for Khamzat to go against just because of where he's at in his career. He's definitely past his prime. And that's why he's such like the underdog in this scenario. But then in that Gilbert Burns fight for Chimaev, obviously Gilbert Burns was like looked amazing in that fight.
Yeah.
But what we did see from Chimaev is that he was reckless. And I don't know if that's great when you're going up against someone like Kamaru Usman, because Kamaru Usman is going to be very composed. He's got all that experience from being champion for so long. And if Chimaev comes in reckless, even though he might be dominating Usman, all that he needs is like one little gap in Chimaev's game plan. Boom, counter. He could get like pull off the upset. That's the way I see it. I think his fight IQ is better and his composure is better. And that might win against the recklessness of Chimaev.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's an interesting take, mainly because I have the complete opposite take. again, I'm a little biased, of course, because Khamzat is probably one of my favorite UFC fighters, top five for sure. I can't give him the full number one title, but just know he's up there. And I really, this is one of the fights I'm probably the most confident with. I'm not going to lie, I think even if Usman was in his prime, I would still go Chimaev here. So the fact that he isn't, I think Chimaev's obviously super aggressive. He's going to come in hot. And then despite that he's not in his prime, I will say that Usman's wrestling is still pretty superb. That's the one thing he does have to look out for. But if you look just stats-wise, I keep bringing up stats for this fight card, but Chimaev's got him on striking accuracy. He's got him on takedowns per minute. He's got him on takedowns per 15 minutes. He's got him on significant strikes. He's got him on everything. And I know he is kind of a pain in the butt. He's always missing weight or doing something. He's causing headaches for everybody. But
yeah, he's a real thorn in the side of the UFC.
He's just always, you know, I can't say these words on this podcast, but you know what I'm thinking. He's just a pain in the butt. But at the end of the day, he's still one of the most avoided fighters in the world. I think also Usman taking that fight with 10 days notice is something we really need to touch on, because again, I think just him not being in his prime is not going to help him out. I think Chimaev's got him over that. But when you mix in the fact that he took it so late in the game and the fight is across the world in Abu Dhabi, it's going to add to that. So I think I'm really, really confident with Chimaev, not to jinx it, so I'm going to knock on wood if you guys can hear me, but I'm confident in my boy. I'm confident in my Russians. You guys know how I feel.
No, you should be confident. I think he's definitely like a big favorite. It's just, I'm not saying I think Usman's going to win. What I'm trying to say is I wouldn't be surprised if he does.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'd be like, there we go. That's like, it's him. He was a champ. Like, he was so great.
I'm going to be mad surprised if he does. I'm not going to talk for 3 weeks. I'm going to curl up into a ball. I'm just not.
Please win, Usman. I'm kidding. No. I'm kidding.
Wow. I know where we stand.
Yeah,
but no,
crazy.
I am actually surprised, like, in all honesty, that the odds margin is as close as it is. I mean, it's not that close. He's minus 300 versus plus 250, but still, I expected it to be
still not a
wider margin. Yeah, I really did, with everything coming to play here, that he's not in his prime, the 10-day notice, the location, and just the fact that Khamzat's that dude.
And I think another thing, too, that's playing into the odds is that Kamaru Usman is moving up 15 pounds and fighting at middleweight.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know if I definitely do need to do more research and see if Usman has ever fought at 185, but be it as that is, he was a champion at 170. And when you look at Chimaev's like closest fight in the UFC, the Gilbert Burns fight, he fought that at welterweight at 170 pounds. So I think Usman moving up 15 pounds, more so like more to Chimaev's natural weight, I think he's definitely a natural 185er, more so than 170er. I think that Usman is more of a more at a disadvantage than Gilbert Burns was.
And that's why I like him. Give me that underdog. You got everything against you. That's what I'm rooting
for. That is true. I feel like we have seen notably that play in people's favor a lot recently especially. But again, too, let's not forget that we have someone 12-0 going up against someone who's coming off a two-fight losing streak. And again, I could keep saying this. The location's really going to come into play here for these Russian guys. It's going to cater to them. This is their audience. This is more so their fan base. And I really think that energy, on top of everything else in Khamzat's favor, is just going to seal the win.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think that I'm definitely going with Khamzat
in
this fight. I think that he, I don't want to say a finish, but I think maybe a decision. I think Usman is too good to really get finished in the octagon, but we'll see. One thing I do want to touch on, though, last thing for this fight, unless if you guys have anything else to add, is that Gilbert Burns is close friends with Kamaru Usman, training partners. I remember, actually, in like the lead-up to who's going to fill in this Khamzat fight, Gilbert Burns posted a photo like, oh, look who's getting ready, and behind him was Usman throwing punches in the octagon. So maybe Burns can, you know, maybe give Usman
the gaps.
Yeah, maybe he could give Usman a bit of a game plan, let him know some opportunities. I think that's definitely a factor in this fight. But for final round table, I'm going Chimaev. Are you officially going Usman, Andy?
Come on, do it.
If
make
I had to put money on it, I'm really liking that payout. So I'm gonna go for Usman.
Ooh. He's liking that payout.
I will say,
he's a better.
What I see Zach putting his fist in the air. I feel like I know who he's pulling for. Yeah, I see that look, Zach.
And obviously,
I see that.
Wait, so Zach, let me know IFB me. I just want it. Wow, you heard it here
all
first,
day.
Folks. Zach is going.
Yeah.
No. That is
too
going
late.
In the pod. Zach said Usman all day, Kamaru all day.
Get
so,
that on record for sure.
Yeah. Hey, man, you just better hope if he loses, you're not on this assignment for next week.
No, I will say, though, if he wins, well, thankfully I won't be here next week, but if he wins, which he won't, I want to, you know, get that manifestation out there real quick. You guys are going to have a lot to laugh about in my face for a very long time. And
oh,
this is a very rare occurrence, so just know that if that happens, I'm going to avoid you at all costs.
I'm like sending this clip to Madi right after this episode, just so he, you know, has it on file on his phone. Maybe he could bring it up next week.
I wish he was here, just for the sake of being my good luck charm, because when I know he would go against me, it's just typical Madi. And every time he does, it helps me. I swear, the couple times he hasn't been on the pod, they're the times I'm wrong. It's just his energy.
Let's go.
Yeah, his energy jinxes himself, and it helps me. I need him. Madi,
Andy's like the
you?
Bad luck charm for Riley, I guess. Or maybe
just
Madi's just that good luck.
Yeah, Madi is my good luck charm. I think Andy's a little bit, because there was a couple fights over the summer when me and Andy were on the pod together. I think that was my first big wrong pick. It really was. And I was. That
I'm
was my also
here.
Yeah, that was my first time meeting Andy too. I want to add really quick, and I cursed his name for weeks. I was like, "Get this kid off the show. I never want to see him again."
Surprise, the king is back.
Yeah.
Great. Well, moving on though, we finally have our main event. Oh, I'm so excited for this one.
Yeah.
Islam Makhachev versus Alexander Volkanovski for the lightweight championship belt. Guys, I'm so excited for this fight. I can't wait to see how it plays out. Volkanovski coming in, I believe, around like 10 days, 11 days notice, you know, same as Usman. And his whole sentiment coming into this fight is like, guys, I'm coming off of the couch. I'm just going to bring the pressure to Makhachev. I'm going to see what I can do. And it's giving me like kind of the feeling that, you know, he's like, he's just going to, actually, Zach talked about this to give him credit. I think Volkanovski is going to come in there just dangerous. He's going to be willing to take chances. I don't think he's thinking about it so much as like the first fight where it was like, oh, I'm moving up 10 pounds. I could be a double champ. I could be pound for pound number one. All these things running through his mind. I think that the stakes are way lower for this fight. And because of that, I think Volkanovski can be way more dangerous than he was in the first fight. But just to ask you guys, I mean, what do you see in this matchup? Who are you picking?
You take it first, Andy, because again, we already know what I'm doing here.
No, I fully agree that like he was maybe too cautious in the first fight. Well, we didn't see it really in the fight. I think he had a heck of a fight, but you know, in the back of his mind, he might be thinking, I'm like, I have this great legacy. I can't tarnish it right now by moving up, losing. But then you got such a close result. And now that he already lost, that fear is out. You know, like, it's not like, oh, if I lose, everything is ruined. Like, he lost and he's still doing great. He's still the great. So I think that factor, like that change in mindset where now he can say, like, you know what, whatever, I'm just going to go in there and go crazy, not afraid to take risks, that might get him the win low-key.
Yeah, first I want to preface this just by saying that I should be an honorary Russian at this point because it is unreal the amount of love and support I show these Russian, Dagestani, not even just Dagestani, all these Russian fighters. They have carried me to the top, I swear. They're my good luck charms, actually. And I'm going to do that again here. I think this is a crazy scenario. Makhachev, I mean, he already edged Volk the last time they fought. And on top of that, it's the same thing. I feel a little repetitive here, but it's the same thing for the last fight. I think the location helps Makhachev here. Volk, that's not going to work in Volk's favor. I think also returning to the division with just 10 days notice is unreal. What was he having to drop from 180 pounds to 155?
That is a big factor.
That
I'm
is
glad
a
you
huge
that.
Factor, an unreal factor. Can you just process how wild that is? Not to mention significant strikes work against Volk here. I think Islam Makhachev is just strategically better in every aspect. Again, I'm super biased. I'm sorry. I know that's controversial.
Wow.
I'm super
strategically
biased.
Better.
Ooh. I'm biased. But I still believe that. And I think the one thing about Volk is he is a volume striker, which we got to give him that. He's a very good volume striker. But then you have Makhachev here, who absorbs the least amount of strikes per minute in lightweight heavyweight history.
And I would say,
but look at his
that,
face after
yeah.
Volk.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Looking at that first fight. What about that?
A win is a win.
It was a very close fight. I almost said Chimaev. But Makhachev did come away with that win. And I have rewatched that fight a couple times. I think that it's a very, very close fight. And I think Makhachev deservedly got the win. I think Volkanovski, like you said, maybe was a little bit too cautious in that first fight. And only really in that fifth round he realized, like, oh, I can just go for broke here and I won't, like, get finished. Like, I think kind of the mystique of Makhachev and Nurmagomedov and, you know, like these Dagestanis kind of started to slip away from him. He was like, oh, this is just a normal guy. I can really, you know, push the pace against him. So I think that is what is making me really, really excited for this fight. And I think that's why Volkanovski can possibly do it. I know, like, the weight cut is a big factor. The size is a big factor.
Stop shaking your head, Zach.
See, Zach agrees with me.
3v1
over here. I'm speaking facts over here.
No, I fully agree that, like, he's the great for a reason, you know? Islam, before that fight, looked unbeatable. Like, no one thought they were going to even get close. And that probably was why Volky was so, like cautious. Not only because he didn't want to lose, but just thinking, what is Islam actually capable of? But now that he's felt the power, he's seen the wrestling, he knows, like, I can beat this guy. That confidence is going to be huge. And then for the weight cut, Islam cuts a lot of weight too, so I don't
very true,
a lot of weight. He's a weight bully, so
yeah.
I think
I don't know.
No, I've seen that term thrown around, like Islam Makhachev. Like when he fought Thiago,
he's huge though.
Yeah, when he fought Thiago Moises, it literally looked like he was on like death's door. But he does make the weight, and I mean he makes use of the size advantage. But Riley, what were you gonna say?
I mean, you're right that was a close fight. I will say that it was. You can't deny it. No one can deny that it was a very highly debated outcome as well, but Makhachev still came on top, and that was without all this stuff working against Volk. Again, to reiterate, Abu Dhabi, that's one thing. 10-day notice. This huge 180 to 155 is an unreal weight cut. That's just crazy. I can't even think of doing that. I wish I could do that. If someone could teach me how to drop that weight that fast, please, actually. I need to be on his diet plan. But aside from that, I think we're also forgetting, too, the arm surgery. I know it was, 3 months ago, but still, I think that's going to be an issue coming into play. I think if he was fully healthy and didn't have all this stuff working against him, I think then it would be something I would actually be a little iffy on, even though I love my Russians. But with all this stuff coming into play, on top of how Islam still edged him last time, I would just be crazy not to pull for him. And again, I would never go against him anyways, but
yeah, I mean, I'm glad you really talked about that arm surgery there, because I think that's kind of the, you know, whole point where he was fighting at International Fight Week, beat Yair, and he was like, guys, I'm going to take some time off. I've done a lot, you know, moved up, tried to become a double champ. So at least for me, I was expecting him to be out for a while, and I was, you know, pretty happy with that. just to see some more action in the featherweight division, and also, you know, ensure that he stays up at his prime, you know, because I feel like some other fighters really have, you know, forced themselves to continue competing without having the same level of style or technique, a.k.a. Israel Adesanya. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But, yeah, I think that's a great point. Volkanovski, I mean, he's definitely, like he said, he's coming off the couch here, which I think makes him dangerous, but also makes him out of practice, too, which I think is an equal point to, I guess, combat me, Andy, and Zach. I think we're all in agreement here. We're kind of ganging up over here. But, yeah, at least for me, I think Volkanovski possibly could get it done via decision. I don't see a finish. If anything, maybe I would see like later rounds, round four, round five, if Makhachev's really starting to fade. But yeah, I think I might go Volk decision.
Same. Volk decision. I think Islam should win. And even though it's 3-1, I think we are in the minority thinking that, like, the great could win. But yeah, I think he has the tools to do it.
Well, you already know my answer, but I want to say it just feels so good. I'm going Makhachev.
Do you think finish, decision? What are you seeing?
Man, don't give me this pressure. I'm starting to get a little nervous with this 3-1 vibe. I say finish. I do.
Wow, okay.
I say finish. I think there's a lot working in Islam's favor, and I think that's going to... And he's a takedown guy. He has a great takedown average. I think that's going to... I'm hoping for it. I mean, that's what I want to see here.
Yeah, no, definitely, we'll see. Zach, what do you got? IFBB me.
Wow.
Volk third round knockout, take it to the sports book, put the mortgage on it. That's what he said. That is a crazy take. We'll see. Yeah, man. That with last fight too, man, you might be run out of pound for pound starting next week. We'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah, Zach just told me he comes from the land down under, and I do love that intro song. I will say, a little bit of a side note, one of my favorite walkout songs in UFC history. But anyway, though, that is UFC 294. I'm so excited to watch it on Saturday. And also, a special notice for our listeners out there, the early prelims start at 10 a.m. The preliminary card starts at 12 p.m., and then the main card starts at 2 p.m. So just make sure that you guys are aware of that early start time. Yeah, I don't know, brew some coffee. get some, like, a nice little brunch or something. I don't know. It'll be a nice fight, not night, but I guess day? I don't know. Anyway, though, that's UFC 294. I do want to talk about this celebrity boxing that is officially in the books now. It was KSI versus Tommy Fury and Logan Paul versus Dylan Danis, the prime fight card or boxing card as they kind of advertised it. But yeah, I mean, just as kind of I expected, there's a lot of controversy coming out of these fights. Yeah, we'll talk about the one that actually ended in a decision first and then the DQ one after. But Tommy Fury defeats KSI via majority decision. Guys, first of all, did you watch this fight? Yes,
I did. I'm a huge KSI fan.
Oh, okay,
I was at MSG. Gross. Getting ready to watch the Knicks, and I'm watching on my phone. My girlfriend's like, "What are you doing?" I was like, "I need to watch KSI fight. You know, I need to." And the headline you just read: Tommy Fury defeats KSI. Wrong. Tommy Fury robs KSI. That's what happened. That's the headline.
Wow. So Riley,
over this.
I know that you were had all your eyes on Logan Paul versus Dylan Danis, but did you watch this fight?
I watched clips of the fight because it's exactly what I expected to happen. I expected a Tommy Fury win. Of course, there was a little controversy over that. And then I think everyone with eyes, I think even Stevie Wonder could have saw this Logan Paul win coming over Dylan Danis, even though we were all secretly rooting for Dylan Danis because...
Well, I wasn't.
Oh, my God. We can't even get into this because I'll go on a tangent for 45 minutes. So you should be thankful that you weren't on the pod for the last couple weeks then, because I would have
talked your ear off.
It's been a whole saga.
Yeah,
it's been a saga that you would not have enjoyed then, because how do I word this? I gained so much love for Dylan Danis throughout this process. Love that I have never had, because Logan Paul sucks. And
they
Logan
both suck.
Yeah, but when someone who's the biggest troll ever gets trolled and can't handle it and is such a baby about it, it's so satisfying. And I just think Dylan Danis sucks too, but he was able to out-troll the biggest troll, and I love that. So to me, even though Logan won, which we all knew was going to happen, I'm, in my eyes, Dylan's the winner. I still think that's why I think it worked in his favor. All
right, I'm going to bring it. I'm going to talk about my KSI point first, and I actually do agree with you. I think that KSI kind of did win that fight, which is crazy.
It was close, though. The Rob thing is a bit exaggerated.
Yeah, 60% of the fight was just hugging. The other 40% was kinda,
more like 75-25.
Yeah, and it was just, oh, my God. And the other half was just KSI doing, like, half jumping jacks and then, you know, going in with, like, the huge right hand and then after that just clinch. But yeah, I don't know. I just think in terms of production, KSI did a little bit more. He landed maybe slightly cleaner shots. I know Tommy Fury's jab was looking a lot better than KSI, which KSI's jab is like non-existent. Anyway though, yeah, I don't know. It was just such a bland and not a fight that didn't deliver that I was like, honestly, I don't even care who wins this fight. If anything, it could have been a draw, and honestly, I would have been, like, happy with that. I would have been like, whatever, just move on. But, yeah, I mean, at least Tommy Fury doesn't get disowned by Tyson Fury, you know, for losing to a YouTuber.
Yeah, but all his family, his dad, his brother, are all saying, we wouldn't be surprised if he had lost that. Like, that's what you know is that's a bad look. That's a really bad look.
It's
and
a bad look.
This is why I'm saying he got robbed. Rounds 1 and 2, KSI definitely won. 3 and 4, definitely Tommy. 5 and 6, toss-ups.
Yeah.
So, to me, I see it either Tommy wins 4-2 on rounds, or they tie 3-3. That was my honest take. Even though I'm a KSI fan, either he tied or he lost by one round. But then there was the point deduction.
Yeah, the point deduction was a big factor in this fight, and I felt like, oh, since the point deduction was, you know, something that happened for Tommy, KSI obviously was going to win this fight, but I guess those last two rounds were such a toss-up that it went Tommy's way. I don't know. It was just so weird. Like, I don't know.
But this is my issue.
Yeah, what's your
issue,
Andy?
Even if he got the point deducted, he still could have won if he wins all four rounds. The issue is, when you look at the scorecards, two of the judges gave Tommy round two. There is no world where he won round two.
Yeah, wait, actually,
that's
crazy.
Where he got robbed. That's why I think he got robbed, because there's no way KSI lost round two, and two of the judges gave Tommy round two, and that's how Tommy won. If they score round two for KSI, KSI wins by split.
See, I'll take your word for it, but I couldn't even bring myself to watch it. We've talked about it so much, like so much, to the point I'm just like, I'll watch the clips because I just know Twitter's going to go crazy. I know Instagram's going crazy, and I just don't care enough at this point. Too much early on that I'm drained. So I'm actually just so happy that we're putting this to bed now.
Yeah.
Unless there's a rematch.
Yeah, please.
Yeah,
don't,
and I will say,
don't tell me that. No.
Oh, yeah, the possible Logan versus Dylan rematch in MMA, which Logan's like, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, because Logan's just one of those people
he's legitimately, like, I don't think he wants that fight.
No, of course not, because he pays people that he knows he's going to win against to make him look like the better fighter. And it's like, you're boxing Dylan Danis, who's a UFC MMA type guy, BJJ guy, and he hasn't even fought since like 2019 in that realm, let alone boxing. So it's just a matter of
Jake started that. Though,
it was a cherry-picked matchup. The thing is, though, like, at least how I personally viewed it, was like Danis was talking all this smoke in the lead up to the fight, like so much so that I was like, okay, if you're talking this much smoke, you might as well perform well in the ring. And that's kind of what I was expecting, for him to at least show up in some modicum. But wow, it was such a bad performance. Like, oh my God. Like, he couldn't even finish the double leg takedown that he tried on Logan Paul.
I was about to say that.
I know. It was so funny. See, like, you are a grappler, man. And you're also in gloves, too. Like, Logan did not have the best balance there whatsoever. Just like.
And then he went for the guillotine, too.
And that also didn't work.
Lost it. And then gets ground and pounded. Security comes in. Like, come on. Like,
such an embarrassing way to lose that fight.
Again, I could say a million times Stevie Wonder could have saw that coming. anybody knew that was going to happen. But I have to just disagree with you there, Andrew, because him coming so hot early on with the trash talk and all this, I felt like that proved that he was going to lose even harder, because he knew he was going to go in there and lose, so he had to at least get some fan love on his side. I think it was known from the start he was going to go in there and lose, just the same way Nate Diaz and Jake Paul. That was another crazy one. Nate Diaz, who's a washed-up, drunk UFC fighter, is not a boxer. And it's Jake Paul and Logan Paul. They act like they're so great, and they're taking over the boxing world. And let's see a real boxer fight. And obviously, that's the hate comments they're constantly getting. Like, guys, book a real boxing match. Give us what we want. But
then again, the reason why I support KSI more than Jake, I'm leaving Logan out of this just because Logan this blows. Is his first fight in a year, like in years. But the thing with KSI, like, he's never claiming to be this world champion boxer. He even, like, his whole style depends on him not being a boxer. He always, like, claims his roots of, I'm a YouTuber who boxes on the side. He's not claiming to be world champion. Jake's the one claiming that.
Yeah,
and
no,
that's what rubs
Jake
me wrong.
And
yeah,
Logan.
Like, yeah.
I can't stand. I actually don't hate Jake, really. I'm not going to lie. I know that's very controversial, but Logan's the way worse brother. And after this whole trash talk thing with Dylan Danis, how he's the biggest troll trash talker in the world, and now all of a sudden he wants to be sensitive to it because he kind of was made to look stupid and his girl was exposed and he was trying to be like, oh, I support women. I'm like, no, you never have, Logan Paul. You've never been that stand-up nice guy. So don't try to switch the narrative now to save your image because, I mean, I've mentioned this a million times. I'll end it off here. Logan thought that he was going to be the superhero of this fight because Dylan Danis, everyone hates Dylan Danis. Everyone makes fun of him, whether it's because of Conor McGregor or even if you like Conor McGregor, everyone hates Dylan Danis. So I think Logan went into this thinking he was going to be the superhero, of course. That's why he booked this matchup. And Dylan managed to be the hero. Even though he lost, people still were so amazed by how funny he was. People
honestly
loved him.
I think the thing that I'm happiest about out of this whole Prime fight night, or I guess specifically with this fight, is that it seemed really like no one won this fight. You know, like Dylan didn't win this fight in the octagon, or not octagon, excuse me, ring. too much cage talk. But Dylan definitely didn't win this fight in the ring. He might have won on Twitter, but that doesn't matter, at least to me. And Logan Paul, like you said, he did not seem like the hero winning that fight. Mm-mm. When security was separating them, both of them seemed like the bad guys. And both of them, at least for me, I was thinking, like, why was this fight ever scheduled in the first place? And I'm glad that everyone kind of got that sentiment coming out of that.
Of course. I saw a tweet, or I saw multiple tweets saying this, but it was just people saying, Dylan Danis is going to go in here and lose. But the good thing is that even if he does lose, he's still not the bad guy in our eyes. Like, we still hate Logan Paul more now because he's even more of a joke, because he was a joke for planning this stupidly unfair matchup. Mm-hmm. And then he still just couldn't even handle the trash talk. And I think the icing on the cake, which was a something we haven't touched on since the last pod because it happened after, was the whole face off with the throwing of the water bottle, and then he threw the mic back, and how Logan's little butt buddies, of course, came to his support, and they're like, you can't throw a mic at people, blah blah blah. It's like, okay, you can't throw something first. People's natural reaction are going to be to throw it back. Logan's just that guy that pushes buttons and trolls people and does all these bad things, but then when it comes back to him, he wants to be the boy who cries wolf, and people are so sick of it. And that's what I loved out of this.
Also, my last comment on this, it was also funny how Logan wins. He's doing the post fight there in the ring, and he's mentioning his fiance looks for her. She's like nowhere to be found. That's pretty funny.
Oh yeah, she was probably off with Leo DiCaprio.
That's the perfect that's the perfect way to close this book.
Thank goodness.
On the Prime card. Oh my God, I hope none of these guys fight again. Maybe KSI, you know, but he was kind of fun, at least a little bit. Like, at least he was, like, nice in the buildup. Anyway, though, we're moving on from that. That was, a black hole of just comments there and talking. But anyway, though, I do want to talk a little bit about some news around the combat sports world. And the biggest one is that McGregor has officially re-entered the USADA testing pool. But that comes with the other news that USADA will officially part ways with the UFC in 2024. And this primarily stems from McGregor entering the testing pool again, and how fighters need at least 6 months of testing before they're eligible to fight. The UFC apparently tried to circumvent that a lot similar to the ways that they did for Brock Lesnar for UFC 200, where he kind of skirted behind that. And then Mark Hunt sued the UFC, which actually we didn't even talk about, but a couple weeks ago, that case got thrown out in court. So Mark Hunt actually lost that case, sadly enough. But yeah, it seems like the UFC is back at it with their kind of like weird testing kind of scandal type things. But with USADA officially parting ways with the UFC, the UFC is now going to be partnering with the Drug-Free Sports International Agency, which, Andy, you were saying earlier, I believe they, or actually it might have been Zach. I forget what other organizations they also deal with. I believe it's the NBA and the NFL. Got you. So Drug-Free Sport International deals with the NBA, NFL, MLB, pretty much some of the most major American sports. I think it's a really, I don't honestly, I don't know how I feel about it, because I feel like it was kind of weird how it happened, where USADA put out their own statement that kind of made shed like a really bad light on the UFC and seeming like they were kind of shady. But then UFC's But then UFC's Jeff Nowitzki came out, who works with USADA but also with the UFC, and said that that was all false and USADA was just trying to extend their contract. So it's a big controversy, but at least coming out of this, I'm happy to know that fighters are still going to be tested and still forced to uphold certain values in the UFC if they want to compete. But yeah, I mean, just general sentiments on this, guys. What are you thinking about it? Are you, do you care at all?
Not really.
I don't really. Like, put them all in the juice. Let's see what happens.
So no, you just want to go back to Brock Lesnar, Alistair Overeem.
Hey, it was interesting. Bring back Overeem, yeah.
Oh my goodness. Wow, I'm not going to lie. I would be interested to watch. Not to sound like a psychopath, but I think it'd be great.
It'd be entertaining.
Yeah.
Listen, I think it would be entertaining, but at the end of the day, it is a sport. And I think that, you know, we got to keep our athletes clean, keep them
this
healthy.
This is what we need. We need someone like Andrew at all times to keep us grounded.
I try to mediate a little bit here.
I want chaos. Yeah. Bring me that chaos.
Same. We're a little crazy, I think, maybe. I don't know. But yeah. Hey, anyone who likes to watch UFC fighting has to be a little messed up in the head.
Oh, yeah. No, we're all a little bit crazy.
Yeah, we're all a little messed up, but Zach, we're a little behind. Extra, clearly. Yeah. Yeah.
But one last thing I do want to say about this whole USADA saga, and it will, you know, more news will come out as it, you know, develops, which we will be sure to report on. But the last thing, though, is that former FBI Special Agent George Pirro, best known for interrogating former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein, will be in charge of this new UFC-affiliated drug-free sports international program, which seems like the biggest overkill of all time. It kind of seems like Dana White was just like, oh, we're kind of in some hot water in terms of being, like, seeming shady. What's, like, the most official person that I can pull out to put in power to, like, make it seem like, oh, we're, you know, doing things by the book? Which, I mean, yeah, just overkill, really odd.
Typical Dana.
Yeah, typical Dana. But moving on, though, we actually have some other news in the UFC. And Riley, I think you're going to be happy to talk about this one. And that is,
yeah,
Israel Adesanya officially announces that he will be taking an extended hiatus from fighting following his disappointing loss to Sean.
Sore loser.
Yep, Sean Strickland. Since his loss at UFC 293, he's come out and said, guys, I'm taking a big break. Don't expect me to fight in, you know, for the rest of 2023, obviously, but maybe even 2024. You might see me come back in 2025.
He's so insufferable. I don't know how anyone can like this guy. I really don't. Not only, he's just an annoying personality in general. And then lately, he's just been extra, don't say it, Riley, extra annoying. I'm trying to be very PC on this sweet Jesuit school podcast.
Of course.
But come on, man. Like, how can anyone like him? The whole African, South African debate in the ring, he was annoying there. The whole Alex Pereira saga, I couldn't stand him there. He's a cocky jerk. I'm being PC. And this is the icing on the cake that he now loses, and he's going to say, I'm not returning for years. Like, shut up. I could actually just snap about, but I'm happy. This is a celebration, guys. This is a celebration for the UFC. We are ready, but my God, shut him up and get him out of here. Just good riddance. See ya.
Oh my
fun.
God. Me
Enjoy
and Andy
break.
Had to hold back our laugh. That rant was
with
something.
Peace and love. See ya.
Peace and love. Wow. I mean, yeah, I don't even know where I'm going to go from.
Yeah, I'm much less passionate. I'm just going to say I think he deserves the break. I think he was very active for a champion.
Man, give me out of here.
No, he was very active. Like, you got to give it, love him or hate him, he kept the weight class very active. He wasn't, like, holding up the title, so I got to give respect
and
for that.
And okay, I'm not going to go too deep into this because everyone knows where I stand. Anyone who's ever listened to just a single episode of this pod knows my hate for this man. I'm an Alex Pereira girl. We know what happened that saga. Izzy finally wins. He's on his little high horse, you know, whatever. And then he fights Sean Strickland, who everyone thought was going to be an easy win for him. Even I said it. I hate him.
Yeah,
and I
we
said
talked
it.
About it on one-on-one.
The odds were crazy. It was like minus 700 or something. And he loses so embarrassingly. And now he just can't handle it. He can't handle it. He was champ. He had his little fun there for that little minute after he got the belt from Alex Pereira. And he lost to Sean Strickland. How embarrassing. And the fact that now, instead of trying to be like, you know what, let me come back from that, he's going to chicken out. He's a little wimp. I don't care what the reason is. He's actually taking a hiatus here. He's so embarrassing. He just became more embarrassing. I didn't know that was humanly possible. I'm done. Put tape over my mouth. Let me leave here. I can't. I'm like heated now.
Wow.
I need to go to bed.
The rant in full force.
You knew
it
was
coming. Listen, I'm always a big advocate of fighters stepping away from the octagon for a year or two. When it's granted, like, I think after, like, a big loss, whether you're knocked out, I think, you know, like, maybe Anderson Silva or Chris Weidman situation, that's a little bit different. But somebody that's just taken a lot of damage in the octagon, has a lot of tread on, has worn a lot of tread off the tires, I think that it does wonders to really step out of the octagon for a year or two and then come back refreshed. I feel like you're able to take a lot more damage. You take time out to learn more techniques. So I personally like it for Adesanya, especially considering that he did compete in 5 title fights in just the past 2 years alone, which is pretty crazy. I mean, that's one of the most active UFC fighters or UFC champions in history. I know, Riley, you hate for me to say that.
Okay, I swore I'm done talking.
But, we'll just have to wait and see him when he comes back and see how he actually does, if he even is coming back.
I was about to say if he comes back.
Yeah, but maybe this is it for Adesanya. Who knows?
He retired. He had a good career, so it wouldn't be. Okay.
Good riddance, wow. But, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it for this installment.
Perfect way to end it.
Oh, yeah, perfect way. I think that just about wraps up this episode of Pound for Pound. Make sure to watch UFC 294 this weekend and our recap episode next week, breaking down all the upsets and results. Before I go, I want to give a huge thanks to our producer, Zach Cordova, and my two fantastic co-hosts, Riley Lucas and Andy Rodriguez. I've been Andrew Canary, and Pound for Pound is a production of WFUV Sports.